start right now. Go ahead, Sherm.
Ready to go. Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of Dr. Jim's Wine Reviews podcast. We are very excited today. It's a special day for us. It's our, like I said, it's our first podcast, so we hope you all enjoy it. We're coming to you here from Dr. Jim's very own man cave, also known as the boys' room. And just to kind of give you a quick introduction on Dr. Jim and who he is and his background and things like that. I know we've had a lot of people wondering about who exactly this man is. And I have to tell you, if anybody knows who the most interesting man in the world is, Dr. Jim definitely gives this guy a run for his money. He even has the beard. So in addition to wine, just a little bit of background into Dr. Jim and his wide range of interests. Not only is he very well-versed and a connoisseur of wine, but he's also a connoisseur of scotch, cigars, as many of you probably have picked up on with his Instagram pictures and whatnot. Cigars is a big passion of Dr. Jim's. Pipes. He's also very well known in his circle of friends for being very astute and knowledgeable about watches, specifically pocket watches as well. He's also a motorcyclist. He knows a lot about ancient weapons and artifacts. Some other interests of Dr. Jim's are rocks, minerals, and fossils. He's an accomplished builder. Carpentry is definitely a strong suit of Dr. Jim's. Shoes, specifically Barker Blacks. If you guys aren't aware of these shoes, they're dress shoes. And the collection of Barker Blacks that Dr. Jim has is pretty astounding. Luggage, high-end luggage is another area in which Dr. Jim is known to, you know, he's known to have a bag or two of high-end luggage. Asian culture, specifically Japanese and Chinese culture. Believe it or not, he actually can speak, read, and write with Chinese characters. Musical instruments, jaguars, not the animals, but the cars. He's amassed a pretty good collection of jaguars. Birds of prey, and marathons and triathlons. The cardiovascular aspect of marathons and running and all this kind of stuff. He's an accomplished marathon runner, and he's also participated in his fair share of triathlons. And of course, as you might guess from his name, medicine. Dr. Jim is a family physician. It never ceases to amaze us, you know, whenever we're having conversations with Dr. Jim, you know, we can start talking about essentially anything, and he will know what we're talking about, and he'll pull something out of his collection, and it just never ceases to amaze us. He's a collector, he's a connoisseur, he's an aficionado, a researcher, and an all-around expert in pretty much anything. So, without further ado, we're going to invite Dr. Jim into the podcast, again from the boys' room, and without further ado, Dr. Jim.
Hello, how are you guys today?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. Always a good day in the boys' room.
It is. It's Friday. We have, what do we have in front of us here? We have some wine. We have some cigars. Let's start with the wine, Dr. Jim.
Tonight we're having Lengmel Barossa Blacksmith 2013 Cab Sauvignon from Australia.
And have you had this wine before, Dr. Jim?
I've had it before. It when it first came out, it was actually called Christian's Wine. It then got changed to the Blacksmith. It's part of the actual history of Lengmel. One of the original founders of Lengmel's was actually a blacksmith that came over from Europe and came to Australia. And this name is wine has been named after him. He actually immigrated to Australia in 1842 at 32 years of age, and this is a very good, about a $30 wine that we have here, and it's a very good expression of an Australian Cabernet Sauvignon.
Interesting. Maybe before we get into the wine, how did you get into wine? Like, what was your? Do you remember some of your first experiences with wine? And
like most things, one starts out with a basic knowledge. that expands over time. And as one gets more attuned to different things that one likes, or the history of things, it becomes more apropos to look at certain wines, certain makers, certain histories, because of the provenance and history that goes with it. Not always because of the wines are better than others, but because there's a long history of winemaking, family history, or just history to do with what's happened in the world, that leads to your interest in the wines.
Right, right. I'm looking around the boys' room here, and I don't know if anybody of you heard in the background that gong, but we have quite a few timepieces and clocks and grandfather clocks, and you know, you know, I wish you could see. I know it's just the podcast, but I wish the listeners could see, you know, a sampling of the various collections that surround us. I mean, going over that list, you know, watches, clocks, pocket watches. How do you keep up with all your collections?
One runs from one thing to the next and is at a very hectic pace. One is the sort of knows lots, a little about lots of things, but not a lot about certain things. It's whatever you sort of piques your interest at that time is what you get into.
Right, right. Fair enough. So how do you like to enjoy? We're smoking some cigars here, and we're all smoking. I'll introduce the rest of the crew here. I'm Mr. Poe, and then we have our sound guy here, Mr. Guy, and and we all have to complement our wine this evening. We're all smoking Cuban Punch cigars, and just came back from Cuba, and it's a funny story. Dr. Jim was in Cuba, and he was supposed to bring back a certain brand of cigars for myself.
Yeah.
And in error, which is unlike Dr. Jim, he brought back a different box of cigars.
A better cigar.
Which turned out to be a better cigar. And that brand of cigar were the Punch Double Coronas. And being in Cuba just very recently, we went scouring Havana and different cigar shops for the Punch Double Coronas. And interestingly, we had a very difficult time tracking these cigars down. We bought the last box, well, that cigar shop's last box of Punches, and they've since become a favorite of ours. And unfortunately, they seem to be very difficult to find. But we're all smoking the Punches. And Dr. Jim, what do you think of these Punches?
They're the only cigars in my Louis Vuitton cigar humidor at the present time. The Punches, we were supposed to buy Partagas. We ended up with Punches. But they were the double Coronas. They're approximately almost 8 inches in length and probably a 54 ring gauge. And they're a very good, easy smoke. They draw really well. And we've always enjoyed every single one that we've ever had.
I guess we're going to be enjoying them a little bit less. Hopefully that's not the case, but we're certainly going to be a little bit more sparing with them, I think, since they're hard to come by.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get into this wine here. How does it taste?
It's a dark red, almost a ruby color. It has definite cassis aroma, very spicy. Like a lot of the Australians, there's a lot of pepper and spice to it. Blackberry and currant, and a long aftertaste. It has about alcohol, I think, is 14.5%. So it has quite a bit of finish to that, but it's actually quite smooth for that amount of alcohol. A very well composed Cabernet.
And how old did you say this wine was? This is a 2013.
This is an early. This is 2013, so it's not that old, this one.
Would you say that this is something that could stand a little bit of aging?
Definitely. When I got into Langmel originally, I was into the Shiraz there, Three Valley Shiraz, all of which are very good, very peppery. It's been one of my favorite wine companies out of Australia.
Interesting, interesting. Now, we were, before the podcast, we were drinking a different bottle. What bottle was that?
We were drinking a Nugan Estates, also Australian, Alfredo Shiraz, which is a real different wine, because it's a Australian Shiraz that's made in the way you would make an Italian wine, almost like a Valpolicino, where you've actually dried parts of the grapes, put them on special baskets, and then had that to concentrate the flavors of the grapes before you actually start to ferment the grapes. So it's basically a Australian wine made in an Italian method by a Spanish winemaker. It tends to be a bit more fruity, a bit more lighter, but it's a real different taste rather than the regular Australian Shirazes, which tend to be heavy and peppery.
So, which one of the two are you liking so far?
I like both of them, actually. But both have their own characteristics. One is lighter, has more fruit to it, probably would age. The Nugan will probably age quite well. It'll probably age like an Italian wine. It'll probably get more tawny and more lighter as time goes on. The Blacksmith will stay strong, stay peppery. But both, since their high alcohol contents, will age quite well. Both the Nugan is also, I believe, about 14.5% alcohol.
Interesting, interesting. I'm looking around the room. I can't stop. My eyes are wandering continuously here in the boys' room. And I notice a tremendous amount of empty cigar boxes. And I'm also noticing a lot of empty wine bottles and bottles that have yet to be tried. How many bottles do you have in your collection right now?
There's probably around 1,000 bottles at the present time.
And how long did it take you to amass that many bottles?
Quite a few years. The oldest bottles are probably American Cabs, and then some French Bordeaux's. Most going back to when I started practice, some being in the 1980s to 1990s, but most of those would be Camus Magnums, and then after that it would be a Chateau Clerc Million, Bordeaux's, and some Zinfandels with high alcohol contents, and after that, most of the wines are wines that we go through a little bit more quickly. There'd be more Italian wines and stuff after that.
So from the 80s and 90s is when you started out, you finished medical school.
And then got enough money to be able to collect.
So that was back in the 80s. What was the wine scene like back in the 80s?
The wine scene back in the 80s was more light wines. People were into rosés. They were into Zinfandels. People liked the light, cheap wines. Two-buck Chuck was famous, but with time, as you drink, you get more, your flavors change and your tastes change, and you look for things that are a little bit more specific to your own flavors and tastes.
So you still have bottles from the 80s and 90s. How do you keep yourself from not drinking those?
Since they're magnums, I have to have a good group of people around to drink them with.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. So I don't know if anybody heard that latest gong. Kind of prompted me to take a look at your current timepiece. What are you wearing right now, Jim?
Right now, I'm wearing a Omega Seamaster. From the 80s, I believe. 80s or 90s?
I think it's a late 90s.
Maybe originally, it was owned by Poe and traded for various things with Poe. So this has actually become my work watch. It's the one that I swim with, the one that I do a lot of outside work with. It's my go-to watch for working.
And now, I several years ago, we used to attend these functions. They were cigar dinners, and And we also had wine, of course, at these dinners. Do you remember which kind of wines we had?
I remember the cigars more than I do the wines. And I remember the people at the cigar dinners more than I do the wines.
So how did you get into cigars? I think you've been into cigars as probably as long as you've been into wine.
Yeah, probably. I actually started with pipes probably first. Because of the lore of Alfred Dunhill and the history of his book on how to smoke, that probably got me into pipes first, because I liked the woodwork. The burled walnut, the burling of the different woods and stuff like that, and how the cigar and how the pipes were made really sort of led me into smoking pipes. But I didn't get as interested in pipes because pipes took too long. There were a lot of breathing technique. You need a long time to be able to sit back and enjoy a pipe, whereas a cigar you can put it down for a little while, come back to it.
You have to really pay a lot of attention to the pipe.
Yeah, there's a lot of cleaning and other things.
And it seems like a lot of the interests that you have are very complementary. They're very classical in nature. We have wine, cigars, scotch, watches, a lot of things that have to do with culture. Do you think there's a common kind of theme that in which you have interests?
I've always been a student of history. So all these things tend to have a history to them.
Mm-hmm.
And because the histories that link them is what links people together. Mm-hmm. And social events together. And I think mm-hmm. that's more what I'm interested in, what has changed in time and history with people, with places, and with the things that they use as instruments of enjoyment over time.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Switching gears for a second, there's some recent news that just came out, and I believe it has something to do with wine and health. And I know that it's a topic that a lot of wine aficionados are interested in. And I think the latest one has to do with, what is it, Guy? Is it diabetes?
It's type 2 diabetes.
So what's the headline here that we're trying to that we're wanting to see if Dr. Jim here can give us his take on kind of the whole thing?
Well, there has been recently a lot of news and viral news, especially on social media, on the consumption of red wine and protection against type 2 diabetes as compared to beer and other alcoholic beverages. So wine is much better, apparently, based on this article, than beer and alcohol beverages. This is based on the Journal of Diabetes Investigation, and just wondering what your thoughts are.
Now, I've not read this article. All I can think of is that wine would have a lower carb content, so it would have a lower so-called diabetic potential. Then beer would have a lot more sugar content, more maltose. So you're taking a higher carb load if you're having other types of alcohol as compared to wine. Wine has also been shown to be helpful for prevention of atherosclerotic disease. Again, this is in moderate usage. If one goes past a certain amount of usage, then one starts to affect the liver. And if you start to affect the liver, then it goes the opposite direction. So small amounts and moderate basis is helpful. The problem with beers and that is there's a higher carb glycemic index, so it takes longer it gets into your system too fast, turns on your insulin production too quickly. It's like flicking a switch too many times, and that wears your system out. So a lower glycemic index goes with wine, plus there's some positive benefits to moderate wine consumption for atherosclerotic disease, which occurs in diabetes.
So that's interesting. Something that just popped into my head is that, so in terms of carbs, of which sugar would be considered a carb,
mm-hmm.
And And considering that wine is predominantly made with grapes, which is a fruit which contains a lot of sugar, I would have always thought that because there's so much more fruit in wine, that wine would have more of a carb component than beer.
No, it actually has a lower glycemic index than beer does. Beer has the higher glycemic index because more maltose, more hops and stuff like that tend to have a higher glycemic index. They go into the system faster than anything else. Comparing ounce of alcohol to ounce of alcohol. Of course, with beer, to get the same amount of alcohol, you have to drink more.
Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. See, it's nice to have Dr. Jim kind of give us his take, because I think that just dispelled a lot of myths for a lot of people. So, how about the kind of advent of there's been a lot of gluten-free beers. Is there gluten-free wine?
Well, that's a good question. Is wine gluten-free? I'm not too sure. I'll have to look this one up. That one I don't know.
That, because it reminds me of
there's certainly kosher wines.
Yes. Have you tried kosher wine before?
We've tried kosher wines, yes.
And how were they?
I haven't had one for quite a while, so I won't comment on them. The time I was drinking kosher wines was back in the days when I was drinking, in the 80s, when I was drinking other wines that weren't as good.
Now, you were on a cruise a couple of years ago, and I seem to recall there being quite a large bottle on the ship, which... it in itself was quite large. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Oh yes,
this bottle,
the Royal Caribbean Oasis of the Seas,
which is the largest cruise ship in the world.
Close. Now I think there's one that's a few inches longer,
right?
Or a couple that are a few inches longer,
but at the time it was the
at
largest.
At the time it was the largest in the world. For their christening, they are partnered with Camus Wines. And Mr. Wagner from Camus Wines, they had a 750 liter bottle of Camus Special Selection.
750 liters.
Yes, which is approximately 7 or 8 feet long by probably about 6 feet wide.
Wow.
And they'd made it into a table in their wine bar.
And was it full?
It was full before they left. And had to be drained out and drank before they left on their maiden voyage. Unluckily, we were not there for the maiden voyage. Mm. Though we did spend a lot of time in the wine bar.
And did you try any interesting wines at the wine bar?
We had a lot of Camus, I'm afraid.
Okay. Very apropos.
Yes, very apropos.
Did you do any wine tasting on the ship?
We did a couple of wine tastings. No.
Rothschild.
I think we did Rothschild wines. I think we also did French wines.
Right.
Both were very good. The sommeliers on the cruise ship were very, very well, very knowledge, and the wines were good.
Hmm. Interesting. Have you been back on a cruise since?
Not lately, no.
How is the wine on cruises? Is the selection pretty good?
The selection can be all the way up to one cruise line where they had Petrus on it. But they had only had one bottle of Chateau Petrus. And when asked about the bottle, they basically said it's about about $1,000 or more. And if you bought it and it was not good, you had bought yourself a very expensive bottle of vinegar.
Oh my.
It was not one that you could return.
Oh no.
So the wines run the gamut. There's a lot of very good wines on cruise ships.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Getting back to the health topic, there's a marathon coming up in on the weekend, I believe.
This weekend,
yeah. This weekend. Now, you used to run marathons.
Yeah, for a long time, yes.
There's been some questions about how alcohol consumption before or kind of during your training affects your performance on race day. Can you give us some insight on that?
I did marathons approximately 10 per year at one period of time. It was a long run of the month, usually. Alcohol consumption depended on how much you were drinking. Small amounts, fine. Larger amounts dehydrate you and actually slow your performance.
Okay.
For the major marathons, I would not drink probably 2 or 3 days ahead, if not longer, depending on what we were doing. And it also depended on the conditions of the race. If it was hot or humid, you would not want to dehydrate yourself.
Very interesting. I'm not a marathon runner. I don't think I ever will be. And of course, the cigars probably don't help. How about cigars in marathons and running? What's there?
The cigars, basically, their main effect is carbon monoxide. They drop your oxygen content by about 10 to 14%, depending on the cigar and the actual ring gauge.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger the ring gauge, the more actually burning area you have, the more carbon monoxide. They tend, by dropping your oxygen level by carbon monoxide poisoning, basically, makes you feel a little lightheaded, makes you feel a little bit lazy, makes you feel a bit happy, especially after you've had a meal and a little bit of wine and your blood's going to other directions. That's the whole effect. It blows off over time. As long as you don't have any heart or lung problems, it blows off over a period of time. Again, it would be something you would not do when you're exercising or before a marathon. It would reduce your peak performance.
Makes sense. I think we have another headline here that's we're wanting to cover.
Thank you, Poe. It's Guy here. On Facebook, apparently is an article that's been thrown around the past week suggesting an open bottle of red wine should be put or be kept in the fridge. According to this wine expert, she says that any lighter reds, such as Beaujolais or Pinot Noir, should be kept in the fridge. What are your thoughts on red wines being kept in the fridge? Because that's kind of, you want to usually drink it room temperature, I assume, but I don't know, in the fridge, I'm not sure. I'm just going to pass.
It might preserve them a little bit longer. I don't think most of my red wines last that long. Those that do are probably we use various wine stops that actually take the oxygen out of the wine, or using nitrogen if we're going to store it a little bit longer. But most of my wines don't last that long that I need to put them in the fridge. The problem with putting them in the fridge, you would have to then bring them back to the proper temperature. So it might preserve the wine a little bit longer, but it's better to actually drink the wine once you've got it open.
I think you did a review some time ago about a component of it or a part of it may have had the ability to cap your wine for a period of time, but I think the main device that you reviewed was some kind of decanting device or some type of aeration device. Do you remember what that was?
Well, we've used aeration devices, but the one to preserve the wine was Vacuvin,
right?
That we used actually to pump it, and it's very good because it actually clicks when you've got enough of the actual vacuum seal into the wine, and that will keep your wine a little bit longer, several days. But over time, as the amount of oxygen in the bottle gets to be more, you can't get enough of the oxygen out to actually keep it from oxidizing over time. We've used several aerators, Vinatieri, I think is who we used, and we've also used Nuance, which is one that actually goes inside the bottle. I actually prefer decanting a bottle.
Okay.
Using aerators is a fast way to decant, but I prefer, especially with an older wine, decanting them in the old-fashioned style.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. I think we're nearing the end of our podcast. So I think we're going to call it a day, and we're going to work on our next podcast, but we thank everyone for joining us today. And cheers, and I think the words of wisdom that we can take away from today's podcast is with respect to storing your wine and having it in the fridge. I think Dr. Jim recommends just drinking a whole bottle.
Just drink it. Have some good friends over in the boys' room or the girls' room and just drink your wine.
Perfect.
Enjoy.
Awesome. Okay, thanks, Dr. Jim, and until next time.
Thank you.